Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, talking all things that we love about being on two wheels.
Full Chat is powered by Bikeshaw as the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and much, much more.
And don't forget, please press the follow button wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. And if you want to see us in full Technicolor, go over to YouTube and you'll love it because you get the absolute treat of seeing just how goddamn handsome Mr. Prutts really is. You are Mr. Prutton. You are a good looking man.
I'm really glad that I'm writing these intros, mate, and that you will read whatever I send you. But of course, it's not about me, Ewan, as you well know. It's about no-nonsense biker chat with those who share our passion, and our guest today certainly fits that particular bill. He's led an extraordinary life as the bassist, composer and singer of legendary British band The Stranglers. He's the only remaining original member of that particular band, and as the synopsis of his recently released biography described, he's been the figurehead of a ship that has sailed the stormy seas of rock and punk since 1974. We should also mention that he has an unhealthy interest, just like us, in motorbikes. It is Mr. Jean-Jacques Burnell. JJ, how are you?
Maintaining my unhealthy interest in motorcycles.
Well, that's good for us, because that's exactly what we need. I've got to start by saying, JJ, are we all right to call you JJ? Yeah, that's all good?
Yeah, I mean, most of my British mates call me JJ.
Brilliant. I've been listening to some of your music again this morning, and what struck me straight away is I forgot how much of your music actually was in the film Snatch, some of Guy Ritchie's movies.
Oh, yeah.
He loved. What is that like for you? Because obviously you've been rocking for years and years. When a film like that, like an iconic film, uses a lot of your tracks and it takes you to a younger and new audience perhaps, does that make you feel pretty proud?
Well, of course. And also, you know, these days music is so disposable. You know, it comes in and goes out the next day and that's everything. So it's kind of, it's really satisfying when music is recycled, if you want, and used, whether it's in an advert or in a movie, of course. And it makes a few more butts come in.
I suppose that's the important thing, JJ, isn't it?
It's one of the important things. It's not the primordial important thing, because it just gets in people's heads, you know. 10 years, 15, 20 years after the release of a record and it's had its life, and then for it to come back in. I mean, you ask Sophie Ellis-Bextor what she thinks about that, you know.
Very, very true. I mean, you talk about off what Ewan said there with regards to the music coming back and constantly on that cycle. The biography that was released last October, Jean-Jacques Burnell's Strangler in the Light, your first official biography. What's that process like? You've got to go rummaging for all the skeletons in the closet. You've got to turn over every stone that's been set down for quite a while. Is it therapeutic? Is it fun? Is it cathartic?
Well, the book was done in a slightly different way, because I didn't want to do it chronologically, because that's how most biographies are done. So it was a set of conversations during lockdown. Mm-hmm. So it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours every week during lockdown, which was a convenient time to do so. So in that sense, it was quite cathartic, I think is the term.
I was looking at some of your tour dates where you're going, wow, you're going to like Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, France, all over the UK. Do you still, after all these years, get the buzz that you used to get? Because I can only imagine, it must be like you're being reborn again, isn't it? Or are you sick of it?
Every night I'm reborn.
Yeah.
But no, the travelling's become a hassle, as you probably know. You know, since 9/11, and since all those, you know, having to take your belt off and taking, you know, all the stuff that's associated with travel these days, so that's kind of brought a bit of a downer on it. But other than that, you know, as soon as I'm on stage and you've got thousands of people in front of you, you're playing with your mates, you know they've got your backs because they're great musicians. There's nothing like it, you know, with your clothes on anyway. Well, riding a motorcycle is very close.
And home for you now, JJ, is France, of course. And just chatting before we start recording, you're down there, I'm up in North Yorkshire, Ewan's on the south coast of England. And both your parents, French, you were born and brought up in England, though. So what proportion of you is English, what proportion of you is French? And do the two marry up pretty straightforwardly?
Well, the French bit is this bit, isn't it? I mean, that's the French bit. That's terrible. But my head is pretty predominantly British because I went through the British education system. Majority of my friends were British, so I identified with all the British things. Mm-hmm. So I think I developed the British sense of humour. I mean, you know, the French don't know about Monty Python and all that stuff and the farce show and all this stuff. You know, the British sense of humour is unique, and what it distinguishes Brits from lots of other people, because the Brits are very self-deprecating. Mm. They don't take themselves too seriously. They take the piss out of themselves an awful lot. And other cultures don't quite get it necessarily, you know.
There is definitely something special about Britain. I really hope it is still Great Britain. But there's many things that aren't right with this country at the moment, one of which is the infrastructure of the roads. I mean, the potholes in the UK, you know, I'm very envious of you, and I'm sure Prutz will be as well, when you tell us some of the dream rides you get where you live. Because quite frankly, I can't really go out on my bike without the fear of getting thrown off the handlebars because there's holes everywhere in the roads.
It's outrageous. But I'm not sure why it is. I mean, I know councils throughout the UK are skint. Hmm. I mean, the country seems to be skint. And, there's only so much money available. And even governments who borrow money, all governments borrow money. But I don't know where it's all gone at the moment. It's, I suppose it could get to be quite a political argument. But
let's just stick where it hasn't gone, and that's on the roads. Yeah.
Well, I mean, on tour in the UK recently, our tour manager had to have his car taken in because the suspension was destroyed by potholes.
JJ, make us jealous then. Tell us your dream ride where you live then. What will be an average nice ride out on a bike for you where you live?
Well, a good ride is the Route Napoleon, which is very close to where I live. When Napoleon escaped from the Isle of Elba before the 100 days before Waterloo, he landed in Antibes, which is between Cannes and Nice. He landed there, and with a band of followers, he skirted the Alps, on the west side of the Alps, right up to Grenoble. It's got hairpin bends. It's got, you're sometimes at 5,000-6,000 feet above sea level. You've got drag strips in little valleys up there, and then suddenly you've got a hairpin bend. And that is a 5 or 6 hour ride up to Grenoble. It's incredible. A lot of the bikers tell me that it's even better on the Italian side, which I have yet to experience. But there's loads, you know. I mean, this was Provence, which was the first Roman settlement outside of Italy. So, of course, the infrastructure, there are a lot of straight roads, a lot of very fast roads. And then suddenly you've got mountains. You know, you've got the Cevennes to the west of me. You've got the Alps. You've got, it's, France is generally much higher, much more mountainous country than UK. I mean, the highest peaks in the UK, what, 4,000-5,000 feet in Nevis and places like that.
That's a hill in France.
That's just average.
So, I mean, that sounds utterly glorious. And again, as I look out the window and it's drizzling here in North Yorkshire.
France is three times the size of the UK.
Yeah.
With the same population. So you've got big gaps. Mm. You don't have to bump into too much traffic.
No.
You know?
So JJ, in terms of being out on a motorbike now, I'm assuming when you're in the UK, perhaps it was a mode of transport in terms of you needed to get through the traffic in London quicker. But in France, it's a luxury, is it, for you, in terms of it's a day out, rather than I'm going from A to B because I need to, I'm going from A to B because I want to.
Both, Ian, because London was much more practical with a motorcycle. And at the time, for years, I had a 900 Triumph Scrambler for London, because it's great. But here, I use it for when I have an appointment, you know, to go, if I have to go to Cannes or something, or just for the pleasure. I mean, it's, you kind of 360 days of biking here, really. Mm. And if I can do some shopping with a rucksack on the back, I prefer to do it with the bike.
Let's see. I mean, the more you talk about it, JJ, the more idyllic it sounds. Let's go all the way back then. let's picture yourself on the day of your bike test. Picture yourself, as we all do, kind of waddling around on our bikes, hoping that we do the right things, say the right things, stop at the right time, listen to the instructor. How were you feeling and how did it go?
Well, it was. I think it was, to be honest, much simpler when I started, because you could get onto two wheels at 16, had a nail plate on, and you could have anything up to 250cc. Now, in those days, 250cc didn't give you much of a motorcycle. So I passed my test on an LI150 Lambretta scooter.
Love it.
I had the Parker. And as soon as I passed that, I saved up for a motorcycle because I really wanted a motorcycle. So I got rid of the back combed hair, got rid of the Parker and the fur around the collar, and saved up. I used to work from the age of 14 every weekend at my parents' restaurant. So by the time I was 17, I had £175 saved up, and I ironed every note. And I bought myself a WLC Harley Davidson 750cc side valve with three hand gear changes and a foot clutch.
Oh my God.
1942 wartime thing. You know, the there were bloody thousands of them all over Europe. And I didn't know the difference between a side valve or an overhead valve. All I knew was 750. And it had a hand gear shift. I didn't know that most motorcycles didn't have a hand gear shift or a foot clutch, you know.
My God.
But I didn't care. And so I kind of bought into the myth, which got quickly disillusioned because it's a shit motorcycle, but a very practical motorcycle.
And really hard work.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it was such a basic machine. You learned basic mechanics. You know, you had it was a 6-volt bike. So you had a 6-volt coil. And once I broke down in France and replaced the coil, the coil packed up, replaced it with a De Chevaux coil.
Really?
You know, you could ride it with a nail in the engine, you know.
What blows my mind now, and I know it was a long time ago, with all due respect, but you said £175 got you a Harley Davidson and you went straight from a Vespa to a 750. That's a big step up.
Well, yeah, I thought it was. It sounded more of a big step up than it actually was. I think the Lambretta was faster than the WLC Harley Davidson, to be honest. But it was fantastic. Basic motor, basic mechanics. It was a WLC, there was a WLA as well. The WLC, the two wheels were interchangeable. So you could you had one spanner which could undo all the wheels, could also undo the cylinder head. It was a flat top. So it was really basic mechanics, and you've got to start somewhere, which was really handy. And then over the years, because of the trends and fashions, I chopped it. So I extended the wheels, extended the fork, and it made it completely unmanageable. But it looked great, psychedelic.
That's motorcycling in a nutshell. It looks great. It's really uncomfortable. It's a bugger to start and look after, but it looks the business.
Absolutely. No suspension, just girder forks on the front, hardtail on the back, and psychedelic paintwork. But, you know, it was of its time.
JJ, it sounds as well, and reading... a fair few articles ahead of having the wonderful pleasure of talking to you. So it starts with a Harley, but then there's a love affair with Triumphs and what Triumphs are that come into play, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. After the impracticalities of the WLC, as soon as I had my first royalty check, I got a Triumph. I think it was a T160, which was a Trident.
Yeah.
And then I got a series of Bonnevilles, and I've been on, apart from a 5-year period when I had a Sportster Harley, when they started getting a bit better, I've stuck to Triumph for 40 odd years. So now I've got three Triumphs. I've got a 1960 Triton.
Nice, very nice.
Which is, a T120, I think, in a featherbed frame. Uh-huh. and 1961. And then I've got an RS Sprint, which is a triple, which is a brute of a, in 2004, they discontinued that particular model.
Yeah,
it's a brute. It's 130 horses. It's got no ABS, no traction control. It's scary. It's great.
Hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, yeah. And then I got a Thruxton R about 6 years ago, which is a lovely, lovely, torquey, nice sounding machine. Really practical for the mountains around you.
Can we just go back a little bit? What I found brilliant there made me laugh. You said about you got your first royalty check and you went and upgraded your motorbike. I'm assuming your parents were supportive of you riding bikes in. Most parents will say, put your money in the bank or buy a property, but you're straight into the motorbikes.
Well, my parents didn't have any choice. Dad used to talk to me about, he had an S7 Sunbeam from the early 50s, which was considered really, you know, classy motorcycle. It was a shaft drive, and it had balloon tires, or I think they called them balloon tires at the time. But way before your birthdays, boys. But you know, you when you talk, I think your parents influence you subconsciously, and they talk about motorcycles and stuff, and it just stuck in my head.
It did for me. My dad, I've said it before, but my dad is and was massively into bikes. And that's what got to me into bikes, going on the back of his bike as a young boy. And I just love the smell of it, the noise, the excitement, the thrill, everything to do with two wheels.
Yeah.
I've been hooked ever since. And I owe that pleasure to my dad.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
what are you riding at the moment, Ian?
I've got a very, you nearly described it. I've got a very uncomfortable Harley Davidson bobber, which I've chopped up. What's the matter, Prutz? He's putting his head in shape. It's a cool looking bike.
It looks
amazing. I've done all the sports bikes and I was getting myself in trouble with the law and I was going to hurt myself. So I slow down and I'm riding it's called a Crossbones, a Harley, which I've ripped apart and rebuilt. And yeah, I love it.
Oh, yeah. That's a good thing about Harleys, I suppose. You can strip them down. They're not too electronics and mechanical. I suppose that's practical. What's that, 1600 or 1800 or something?
I think it's 1700, but I've had it like Screaming Eagle Stage 4 conversion. I think it's about 2 litre apparently, but I don't know. It's pretty quick.
That's the thing with Harleys though. You buy a Harley, then you spend as much getting it to ride. Okay,
yeah, just
put brakes on it. Put a bit of speed on it.
Well, the big mistake I made, I tuned it all up and I did all this to it. I chopped all this and the guy said, you really need to upgrade your brakes. And I was like, how much more will that be? A couple more grand? I went, nah, it'd be fine. So it goes all right, but it doesn't stop. So it's spongy.
Okay, then a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping for you folks. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the show on YouTube for those that like pictures as well as sound. Right, Ewan, back to you, my friend. On you go.
JJ, we've heard about where you live and it sounds absolutely stunning, but given the choice, and I think I know the answer here, on a bright summer's day, you've got the car, you've got the bike, you've got a long commute. Is it always going to be the bike for you?
Most of the time, unless I've got lots to carry and stuff, but otherwise, yeah, it's the bike. I mean, this summer, well, actually, Harrogate's very close to, it's not far from Leeds, is it?
No, I'm not
far from Leeds. Our guitarist rides a Triumph Explorer.
Nice.
He lives in Leeds.
Okay, okay.
He does regale me with some of the really long rides that he do up in the north of England.
Yeah, some beautiful rides up here in the Dales. Gorgeous. Yeah,
he does that a lot. So we've arranged because our tour manager used to race Tritons.
Okay.
And he's always doing up bikes and everything. So he, our agent, our guitarist Baz, myself, we're all going to meet in Carcassonne. We're playing a gig there this summer, and then we're going over to the Atlantic coast, which is surfers area, Biarritz and all that. We're playing a gig there as well. So we're all meeting on bikes. So there's going to be about six or seven of us.
Oh, fantastic! There's a big meetup in Biarritz every summer called Wheels and Waves, which kind of combines motorcycling and surfing, as you say, because it's that big kind of mecca, especially down there where it gets super choppy off that coast. So I don't know whether it's in June sometime. I can't give you the date because I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right.
It might be the same time, JJ.
We'll see you both there then.
Pretty cool place to check out. Yeah, it's slightly more glamorous than some of the bike. I mean, saying that, you and myself were at the XL the other week at the motorbike show, which is lovely. isn't it, Ewan? But I
it
mean,
is nice.
Beer Ritz with some surface sounds a little bit more idyllic.
Yeah. The Docklands in London, yeah, it's not quite, doesn't weigh up, does it?
The same water.
Yeah.
Well.
JJ, can I ask as well, you've been in the industry such a long time. I don't know about yourself, but I think there's something special about being on a bike as well. The fact you put the visor down, the helmet's on, you can be anyone. And you can go around your own business and you can wander off and daydream. And I do most of my relaxing, actually, if I'm out on my bike, where I don't worry about everyday stresses that we have, because you're on the bike and you concentrate on the road. How special is it for you to have that time when you can put the visor down and just be anyone?
Well, I think you just summed it up, Ewan. I mean, you've got a certain anonymity with your helmet and everything, but B, you have to concentrate on a bike. You know, it's death if you don't. So it's tiring, so it's draining. At the same time, it concentrates you. And I don't know about you, but the older I get, the more defensive I get, because, you know, a lot of car drivers are idiots, or they don't see you. They don't see you. And they've got this false sense of security. So I won't take so many risks as I used to. On the other hand, I love an open road, you know, just the sound of the, you know, the bike. And you're always going to get a bit of wind, even if you're wearing, you know, the plugs. And you're by yourself, you're isolated, and you can concentrate. I write quite a few songs when I'm on the bike. And when I've got, you know, the actual framework of a piece in my head, I have to stop, hum it into my phone, take my helmet off, hum it into the phone, make sure it's on, I've kept it, put the helmet back on, and then you can compose a whole opera if you want.
So what the inspiration there? I mean, that's fascinating to hear that, JJ, because Ewan doesn't listen to music on a bike. I do listen to music on my bike, and with the earplugs as well. I once did kind of probably where you were to get back up to the tunnel on a very long Sunday once years ago, and didn't have earplugs in, and spent the next week wondering what on earth had happened to my brain because my ears were ringing that much from being sat on the bike for that long, but. That sense of the rhythm of the road and what comes into your head, because you can, as we all know, because we love it, you can properly lose yourself in those moments where you think, I started here, I've ended here, I don't know how I got here, but I know that I've got to my destination. But to be able to think about musical pieces, about songs, in your unique position as a very, very good musician, that's two of your passions right there meeting in the most creative way.
I think most people who ride a motorcycle, you can hear the difference at different revs. You have the wind, the road surface, and all that combines to give you a rhythm and a melody. You know, I hear loads of melodies coming from the bike and at different speeds and at different roads. And it's incredible the amount of different rhythms and grooves you can get just riding a motorcycle.
That's awesome. I've never thought of it. Like you hear about people who wake up in the middle of the night and have ideas and they write them down. But for you, like Pratt said, to be on the motorbike, concentrating and actually using the different noises and the different senses that you're getting from that ride and turning that into a hit, that's awesome. I love that.
Well, hit, not necessarily a hit.
A hit in your mind, yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's a numbers game, you know. You write about 20 songs, one of them might be a hit.
Do you know when a hit's a hit, JJ, when you've written it?
A lot of the time we have done, yeah.
Yeah.
But then there are, you know, loads of other factors involved in a piece of music. I mean, we've had pieces of music which the record company refused to release. And then 6 months later, it's a worldwide hit. So the record company wants us to release something similar again after they said, nah, it's not going to work. You know. Who knows? Wow.
Here's one for you then, JJ. Here's a question. So imagine I could say to you, you can have any bike you want. You've obviously got the dream rides where you live. You can have any bike you want, but you can have to swap it for your bikes. Would you do the swap? And if so, what bike would you go for? Or would you say no? Because you sound to me like you're in love with the bikes you've got already.
That's a cruel question. Yeah.
I know, I'm sorry.
Have you got any kids?
Yeah, three.
Right. Who's your favourite kid?
My first one. Easy. Yeah. No, I'm joking.
I did not expect you to say
that. I'm joking, all of them. Yeah.
Exactly. That's such a cruel question. At the moment, you know, I'm really quite happy with the bikes I've got. And you can only ride one at a time anyway. Yeah. So,
is there any bike, though, on the market? Is there any bike that you've looked at and you thought, cool, that would go well around these areas?
Not really. No, not at the moment. I haven't been unfaithful in that respect. But as people tell me, there's no harm in looking.
that's the thing, though, isn't it? I'm very much that cliched biker who rides his bike around to other motorcycle showrooms just to walk around. And the amount of people that the people in the shop must get, where they just see you coming a mile off. Do you want a hand? No, I'm all right, thanks. They're just thinking, you've just come into our nose, haven't you? It's like, well, yeah. Don't make your showroom so nice and inviting if you don't expect me just to pull over, come in, look at a few things, pick up a snood and walk out.
Well, there are tons of great-looking machines. I mean, we stopped off on the motorway a couple of years ago. We were on touring, and there was a whole bunch, I'd never seen them before, Indians.
Yeah, beautiful.
These huge Indians and a whole club of them. And I was fascinated by them. I wouldn't want one, but absolutely fascinated looking at the differences and what they've done to them. As I said, there's no harm in looking.
I think that's the thing with bikes, isn't it? There's so many different types of bikes, whether it's sports bikes, touring bikes, you know, enduro bikes. You can appreciate other bikes, can't you? If you're a biker, it's in your blood. You love all bikes.
Yeah. And there are some really attractive looking machines out now. I mean, even look at these Royal Enfield 650s and everything. Yeah. Am I back in the 60s or something? You know, they're nice. I don't think any, it's like cars. I mean, manufacturers can't make shit product these days. No. They won't survive. So, you know, everything's valid.
And such, as you say, I can get caught in so many YouTube wormholes looking at reviews of bikes. So you're absolutely right, JJ. I mean, if anyone makes a wrong one, then it's very quickly picked up on, isn't it? quickly. Pulled apart online, and then that can kill a brand, it can kill a make a bike, it can kill a release, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Well, you spoke earlier on about riding in France and what it is like to ride in France and some beautiful routes, but we're heading into final question territory where we want you to create this wonderful mental image of riding off into the sunset, wherever that sunset may be. So as we all know, music and bikes, they've always gone together. We've mentioned it already. It's where you do some of your writing. So if you can picture, just tell us your perfect ride. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you riding? And what's on the soundtrack?
Cool. A really good ride for me would be from, you get off the ferry, say Portsmouth to Caen. So you're on the old the Normandy beaches, where, you know, a lot of people lost their lives.
So much history down there, isn't there?
And then you head into Brittany, because there's some great roads in Brittany. It's like Cornwall. You know, it's kind of the same landmass, I think, really, before the ice, before the water broke the bridge between England and the continent. Brittany's great. Then down the west coast of France. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack, I'd probably listen to some really old 60s stuff initially. And then along the lands, you know, that straight strip of sand between south of Bordeaux down to the Spanish frontier?
Yes.
There's pine forests there, and you can really smell the pines.
Would that be down near Hossegor and that type of
down where?
Down near Hossegor, so you are kind of beer ritzy type. You've just invoked, sorry to butt in on your dream ride, but you've just invoked a very vivid memory of me being on my bike down there years ago, and it is literally that smell. I can smell the pine.
I could taste it. I've never been there, but you describing it, I could smell it. I was like, oh, I need to get out of my bike.
It's fantastic road. Then it starts getting a bit complicated. You skirt the Pyrenees, which is fantastic. And you can even climb up some of the peaks. And then you eventually get to the Mediterranean. Try to avoid the coast road there because that's a bit too touristy. Mm. But there are loads of places and little stopovers in little towns and villages where you can drink to your heart's content and eat lots of good food. And they love bikes. Their bikers are so welcome down there. Yeah, that's quite a good run. I would say that's if you're not in a too much of a rush, you can do that in about a 4 or 5 day run. Just take it easy. Yeah.
Sounds fantastic. Forget your soundtrack you're listening to. How many songs would you have written on that beautiful ride you've just described?
On that ride, probably none. On other rides, I've written about half a dozen. But you were asking me my ideal thing. I would like to do that. I've done that only twice, that run. Hmm. Get off the ferry from Portsmouth, Cherbourg or Carlton. Take a bit of time, yeah.
It sounds delightful. I mean, just to round it off, would you when it comes to being a career musician, a very successful career musician, JJ, when you're potting around the kitchen, when you're in the car, when you're listening to the radio, and one of yours comes on, that can never not be a novelty, surely.
No, it's always, well, especially since we don't get played that much. But occasionally, it's always a buzz, of course. It would be for anyone, something that you've spent time on, written, and then almost forgotten about. And then suddenly you're reminded of it because it's on the airwaves or on a TV advert or something. It's always a buzz.
Is it a sense of it then becoming something that you wrote that's now not yours? Because then you release it out and it becomes everyone else's, doesn't it?
No, it's mine!
But I think the beauty, JJ, of writing such an iconic song that people listen to, it creates memories for them as well, because every time that song comes on, they'll associate it to a time of their life when it was important to them. And you must be proud of that.
Well, I think that's one of the fundamentals of music. It takes you to where a moment in time. And sometimes there's soundtracks for a lot of people's lives. And we're fortunate in the UK that we are a very musical country, very musical nation. We provided an awful lot of soundtracks for the rest of the world.
JJ, I mean, this has been wonderful. I mean, sadly, that's about it for this week's full chat, which has been powered, of course, by Bikeshaw. It's a shame, as I could gladly paint pretty pictures of motorcycling through Provence all day long, my friend. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and much, much more.
We've absolutely loved this episode. Thank you so much to our very special guest this week, the one and only JJ Burnell. And make sure you catch the Stranglers on tour this summer. Go and buy his book. We've spoken about it, Strangler in the Light, which is available in all good bookshops. It really has been a pleasure.
With lots of naughty words in it. All right. All the best.
Well, don't forget to follow us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so you never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole show on YouTube, as you probably have done just now with JJ.
Yes, and thank you so much once again for listening, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.